What if machines could learn not just from, vast data sets, but by actually interacting with the world, making mistakes, learning from them, getting better over time?
Exactly. We're talking about reinforcement learning, or RL. It's the thinking behind some really jaw-dropping AI stuff lately.
Yeah, from mastering super complex games to controlling robots. It's pretty wild stuff.
It really is. It flips the script from AI just processing static info to, well, dynamic adaptive learning. Learning to act to achieve goals.
And today, we're doing a deep dive into exactly that reinforcement learning. We've got a great source to guide us. Reinforcement learning, concepts, algorithms, and applications from Rise of Agentic AI.
Right. Our mission today, to really unpack the core ideas, look at the algorithms making it happen, and see where it's being used, especially how it's, shaping the future of AI.
So by the end of this, you should have a really clear picture of how these dynamic, kind of autonomous learning systems work.
Yeah, you'll get how they sometimes achieve this superhuman performance we hear about, but also, importantly, what challenges are still out there.
Think of it as your shortcut to getting up to speed on this really fascinating bit of AI.
Definitely.
Okay, let's unpack this. So let's start right at the beginning. What is reinforcement learning exactly? And maybe, how's it different from the machine learning most people might have heard about?
Okay, so RL is, well, it's its own thing in the ML world. The source nails it.
Mm-hmm.
It's about an agent, the learner, interacting with a live environment, learning, improving dynamically over time.
And the key thing is, it does this mostly without humans holding its hand, right?
Yeah.
No constant supervision.
That's the core idea. And the agent's ultimate goal.
Mm.
It's surprisingly simple. Just maximize future rewards.
Yeah.
That's it. It's not about labeling pictures or finding hidden groups in data.
It's about making smart decisions sequentially for the best long-term outcome.
Precisely. And that makes it fundamentally different.
Right. Let's contrast it quickly. Supervised learning, that's like flashcards for AI, isn't it? You show it tons of labeled examples. This is a cat. This isn't. Fixed answers provided.
Exactly. Learning a direct map from input to output, from labeled data. Then you've got unsupervised learning,
where it finds patterns on its own, like clustering news articles without knowing the topics beforehand.
Yep. Discovering structure in unlabeled data. But RL, it's a whole other beast.
It's dynamic. It's sequential. It's trial and error. It's constantly adapting based on feedback.
Think about how we learn, or animals learn, like a toddler learning to walk.
Oh, yeah. Good one. They try. They fall. They get feedback. You know, gravity isn't forgiving and they adjust. Try again.
Exactly. It's learning through doing, through direct experience, not from a pre-made instruction manual. That interaction is key.
And this approach, it's led to some pretty amazing things. Robotics, self-driving cars,
yeah.
But games, right? That's where it really blew up first.
Oh, absolutely. Strategic game playing was the big showcase. AlphaGo beating Lee Sedol in Go, that was huge.
A game with more possible moves than atoms in the universe, supposedly.
Something like that, yeah. And then AI mastering chess, complex video games.
You're right.
It showed the raw power.
And they didn't just win, they showed superhuman performance. But the source says this isn't just about being faster, right? It's about discovering new strategies.
That's the really fascinating part. It comes from this unconstrained interaction with the environment. Because the AI isn't limited by human assumptions or biases, it can discover novel and optimal strategies that humans might not conceive.
Strategies beyond human intuition. What does that even mean in practice? How does that happen?
Well, take AlphaGo's famous Move 37. It looked like a mistake to human pros.
Mm-hmm.
Totally against centuries of Go wisdom.
I remember that. People were baffled.
Right. But it turned out to be brilliant. Optimal, even. It came from the AI playing millions of games against itself, finding patterns and connections humans just hadn't seen or perhaps couldn't process.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just faster calculation. It was a genuinely new strategic idea.
Wow. So it's like finding a new rule for the game, almost.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Unburdened by how humans think the game should be played. That's the superhuman bit. Not just speed, but actual innovation.
Incredible. Okay, so if that's the potential, how do these things actually work under the hood? The source gives us this ARE mnemonic, agent, reward, environment, action, sometimes state, making it areas, plus policy. Let's bring those down.
Sounds good. Let's start with the agent. That's the core learner, the decision maker.
The thing doing the stuff.
Pretty much. The thing that takes the action. Could be a drone flying, Mario jumping in a game, a self-driving car steering.
Mm-hmm.
It's the active part, the brain, making choices.
Got it. Agent. Next up. Environment.
The environment is the world the agent lives in and interacts with. It sets the rules.
Like the maze for a mouse or the chessboard?
Exactly. or a busy street for a self-driving car. The environment gives the agent observations, what it can see or sense about the current situation, the state, and it also gives out rewards.
Ah, the feedback loop.
Precisely. Those observations and rewards are what shape its learning process. It's the playground and the rulebook combined.
Okay, and you mentioned state or observation. That's like the agent's view of the environment right now.
Yep. It's the concrete and immediate situation. All the relevant info the agent can access. The position of chess pieces, sensor readings from a car, pixel data from a game screen.
And this state usually changes after every action the agent takes.
Right. And a key distinction the source makes is observability. Is the environment fully observable, like chess, where you see everything?
Or partially observable, like driving, where you only see what your sensors pick up. You don't know exactly what the driver two cars ahead is thinking.
Exactly. And that partial observability is a huge challenge. How do agents deal with that uncertainty, make good decisions without the full picture?
Yeah. What do they do?
Guess. Hey, not exactly guess. They often need to build an internal model or maintain a belief state like probabilities over what the true state might be based on history and current sensors. This might involve things like memory, using recurrent neural networks to track things over time. It's about managing uncertainty intelligently.
Okay, that makes sense. So after state comes action. That seems straightforward. It's what the agent does.
It is. A decision made in a given state. The set of all possible decisions is the action space.
And this can be simple stuff like left or right, jump.
Right. Those are discrete actions.
Yeah.
A finite set. Or it can be continuous, like a steering wheel angle or acceleration,
oh.
A value from a range.
So the agent sends these action commands back to the environment.
Exactly. That's the core interaction loop.
Mm.
Perceive state, choose action, get reward, and next state.
Which brings us to reward. You said this is critical. The source calls it maybe the most critical component.
It really is. The reward is the feedback signal. It tells the agent how well it's doing. Measure the success or the failures or the penalties.
Positive for good stuff, negative for bad, can be immediate, like points, or delayed, like winning the whole game.
Correct. In designing this reward function, that's where the art comes in, the source says the design of the reward is the most critical component. Why?
Because the AI is laser focused on maximizing it.
Precisely. All reinforcement learning algorithms seek to maximize the reward of the agent, nothing more, nothing less. Their goal is to maximize the total amount of rewards. If your reward function doesn't perfectly capture what you actually want the agent to do, well, things can go sideways.
Like the example of the cleaning robot just scattering stuff to pick it up again, gaming the system.
Exactly. Or agents finding weird loopholes. You have to be incredibly careful defining success numerically. Getting that reward function right is often the hardest part of an RL project. How do you translate drive safely or be helpful into just numbers? It's tricky.
Yeah, I can see that. Okay, so we have agent, environment, state, action, reward. What about policy, represented by PI?
Yes, the policy.
Yeah.
This is basically the agent's strategy. It's thought process. You can think of it as the agent's brain or its decision-making function.
So mathematically, it takes the current state and tells the agent what action to take.
Pretty much. A function that takes the state as input and returns an action. It can be deterministic, always the same action for a given state.
Yeah.
Or stochastic.
Stochastic meaning probabilistic. It gives probabilities for different actions.
Exactly. It returns a probability distribution over actions. This allows for exploration, trying different things.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole point of the RL training process is to optimize a policy to yield maximum reward. This learned policy is the solution.
Got it. And one more key piece, the value function, often the Q function. This isn't the immediate reward, is it? It's more long term.
That's the key difference. The value function estimates the expected total future reward or return starting from a particular state, assuming the agent follows a certain policy.
So reward is immediate gratification. Value is long term potential.
Nicely put. The value function specifies what is good in the long run. The Q function specifically is super useful. It takes the current state and a potential action and predicts the total future reward if you take that action now and then follow your policy afterwards.
So it bundles the policy and the long-term value together.
In a way, yes. It combines the policy and the value into one function that you can learn. And if you have a perfect Q function, finding the best action is easy. Just pick the action with the highest Q value in your current state. It tells you the long-term consequence of each immediate choice.
That's incredibly powerful, like seeing the future value of every move.
If you can learn it accurately, yes. It's a cornerstone of many algorithms.
Okay, we've got the building blocks. RREA plus S plus F. Now let's talk about the learning process itself. A big challenge mentioned is the explore-exploit dilemma.
Ah, yes. This is fundamental. It's the trade-off every learning agent faces. Do you exploit your current knowledge, stick with the action you think is best based on past experience to get a known reward?
Or do you explore, try something new, maybe random or seemingly worse, just to see what happens? It might lead to discovering a much better reward down the line.
Exactly. Like the chef analogy. Stick to the hit dish, exploit, or try a new recipe, explore. You need both. Too much exploitation, you get stuck in a rut, maybe a suboptimal one. Too much exploration, you never actually cash in on what you've learned.
So how do algorithms handle this balancing act?
There are various strategies. Optimistic starts is one. Basically, assume unknown actions are great initially to encourage trying them. More common is epsilon greedy.
Epsilon, like a small probability.
Right. With probability epsilon, the agent takes a completely random action, explores. With probability 1, it takes the action it currently thinks is best, exploits.
And does epsilon stay the same?
Usually not. Typically, epsilon starts relatively high, encouraging exploration early on when the agent knows little, and then it gradually decreases or decays over time.
Mm-hmm.
So the agent exploits more as it becomes more confident.
Smart. Explore first, then focus on the good stuff you found. Another concept is the discount factor, gamma. You mentioned this affects how much future rewards are worth.
Correct. Gamma is a number between 0 and 1. It dampens the effects of a reward over time. A reward received 10 steps from now is multiplied by gamma 10 times, making it worth less than the same reward received right now.
So closer to 1 means the agent cares more about the future, more patient.
Exactly. A gamma of 0.99 means future rewards are valued highly, promoting long-term planning. A gamma of 0.1 means the agent is very short-sighted, mostly caring about immediate rewards. It's a way to tune the agent's time horizon, its patience, if you will.
Interesting. And this ties into the return, or total reward, which is the sum of rewards but discounted.
Yes. The return, especially in technical contexts like the Bellman equation, usually means the discounted sum of all future rewards from a certain point onwards. It's the overall score the agent is trying to maximize, considering that future rewards are worth slightly less.
Which leads us neatly to the Bellman equation. You called it the theoretical backbone. Why is it so important?
It provides a mathematical way to relate the value of a state to the value of the next state. It expresses the value recursively. Basically, the value of where you are now depends on the immediate reward you get, plus the discounted value of where you'll likely end up next, averaged over possibilities.
So it breaks down the big long-term reward problem into smaller step-by-step pieces.
Precisely. It allows algorithms to iteratively calculate or estimate these values. It connects the immediate consequences of an action to the long-term goal. It's the quantity many algorithms seek to maximize, and it underpins how agents can effectively plan ahead.
Makes sense. It's the mathematical engine for long-term thinking. Okay, we have the concepts, the dilemmas. Let's get into the algorithms themselves. The source groups them into value learning and policy learning. Two paths to the same goal, the optimal policy.
Right. Let's start with value learning algorithms. Their main goal is to figure out that Q function we talked about, the value of taking an action in a state. The classic example is Q-learning.
Q-learning. You mentioned it's model-free and off-policy. Quick refresher on what that means.
Sure. Model-free. It learns directly from experience, trial and error, without needing a perfect map or simulation of the environment's rules beforehand.
Learns by doing.
Yep. And off-policy. This is clever. It uses one policy to explore, like epsilon greedy, but it updates the Q-values based on the best possible action it could have taken, the greedy policy. So it learns about the optimal path, even while exploring other paths.
Learning from exploration, even if the exploration wasn't the best move at the time, that's efficient. But the old school Q learning had a big problem, right? The table.
The dreaded Q table. Yeah, traditional Q learning literally stored a value for every single state action pair in a giant table.
Yeah.
Fine for tiny problems.
But impossible for anything complex, like driving or even complex games with huge state spaces.
Totally impossible. The table would be astronomically huge or infinite. That's where deep Q learning, DQN, came in.
Using neural networks to approximate the Q function instead of storing it in a table.
Exactly. Neural networks are great function approximators. A DQN takes the state, like screen pixels, as input and outputs the estimated Q value for each possible action. This allows it to handle massive, continuous state spaces and generalize.
And DQNs weren't just about replacing the table. They had key tricks for stability, right? Like experience replay.
Crucial. The agent stores its experience's state, action, reward, next state in a memory buffer. Then, for training, it samples random mini-batches from this memory.
Instead of just learning from experiences in sequence, why random?
It breaks correlations. Learning sequentially can make the network unstable or biased towards recent experiences. Random sampling is like shuffling flashcards. It forces more robust learning, prevents getting stuck.
Makes sense. And the two networks thing, an evaluation network and a target network.
Another stability trick. You have the main evaluation network that's constantly learning and picking actions. But to calculate the target Q values for the updates, you use a separate target network.
Which isn't updated as often.
Right. Its weights are frozen for a while, then periodically copied from the evaluation network. This provides a stable target to aim for during updates, preventing the learning goal from chasing its own tail, which can lead to divergence.
A stable goalpost. Smart. And for visual stuff like Atari games, they use convolutional neural networks, CNNs, and stacked frames.
Yes. CNNs are standard for image processing, extracting features from pixels. And stacking frames using, say, the last four frames as input instead of just one, gives the network a sense of motion, velocity, direction. Crucial for dynamic environments.
Okay, that gives a good picture of value-based learning with DQNs. Now, the other category, policy learning or policy gradient algorithms, like reinforce or PTO. How did these differ fundamentally?
Instead of learning the value Q function first, these algorithms directly learn the policy itself. The neural network outputs the policy directly.
So it outputs the probability of taking each action in a given state.
Exactly. It outputs a policy distribution. Mm-hmm. Then the agent samples an action from this distribution.
Sample, so it doesn't always pick the most likely action?
Nope. That's a key feature. It might pick a less probable action, which inherently encourages exploration. It's baked into the approach.
That seems like a neat way to handle exploration. What are the big advantages of this approach?
One huge advantage is handling continuous actions natively. Think steering a car. You need a precise angle, not just left or right. Policy gradients can output continuous values directly, which is hard for Q learning. They also naturally learn those stochastic strategies, which can be good for exploration or robustness.
And how do they learn? If they're not updating Q values, what are they updating?
They typically run an episode or a rollout, collecting states, actions, and rewards. Then they look at the total return for that rollout. The core idea is simple. Increase the probability of everything that came with a win and decrease the probability of everything that comes with a loss.
So actions and successful trajectories get reinforced, actions and bad ones get suppressed.
That's the intuition. Mathematically, it uses the policy gradient theorem to calculate how to adjust the network's weights to make high reward trajectories more likely. Optimal actions naturally get selected more often over time.
Sounds elegant. Are there downsides? Challenges?
Yes. They can be sample inefficient. Often, the data from one rollout is used for one update, then discarded. Unlike DQNs with experience replay.
So they might need more interaction with the environment to learn.
Potentially, yes.
Yeah.
Mitigation involves collecting larger batches of experience before updating. Another issue is high variance. The return from one episode can be wildly different from the next, making the learning signal noisy. Techniques like baseline subtraction and reward normalization help reduce this variance.
And that brings us to PPO proximal policy optimization. Why is this one so popular, especially with things like large language models?
PPO is a refinement of policy gradient methods. Its key innovation is that it limits how much the policy can be updated in each training iteration. It uses a clipping mechanism.
Clipping, like putting a cap on the changes.
Sort of. It ensures the new policy doesn't stray too far from the old one in a single step. This makes training much more stable and reliable. It prevents the policy from changing too drastically and potentially collapsing performance or finding weird ways to game the reward system.
Ah, avoiding the AI finding loopholes again.
Exactly. PPO provides a good balance of exploration, efficient learning, and stability, which is why it's become a workhorse for many complex RL tasks, including training LLMs.
That idea of gaming the system is a perfect segue to reinforcement learning from human feedback, RLHF. This seems crucial for aligning models like ChatGPT with what we actually want them to do.
Absolutely crucial. RLHF is designed to enhance the performance and alignment of AI systems with human preferences and values. Especially for LLMs, it's about injecting that nuance and subjectivity that's hard to capture otherwise, making responses better aligned to human values.
It uses human judgment in the loop. The source outlines three phases. What's phase one?
Phase one is pre-trained model and supervised fine-tuning, SFT. You start with a base LLM already trained on tons of text. Then human experts create high-quality examples of desired behavior, like good answers to questions, helpful summaries, etc.
So showing the AI good examples first.
Pretty much. You fine-tune the model on these examples using supervised learning to prime the model to generate its responses in the format expected by users. It learns the basic style and structure you want.
Okay, step one, teach it the basics with good examples. What's phase two? This sounds like the really novel part.
Phase two is reward model training. This is ingenious. Instead of humans directly rating every AI output, which is hard and inconsistent, you train a separate model, the reward model.
And how do humans train that model?
Humans are typically shown several different outputs from the main AI for the same prompt. They then rank these outputs based on preference, like this response is better than that one, often using comparison systems like ELO ratings.
So comparative judgment, not absolute scores.
Exactly. These rankings are used to train the reward model to predict which responses humans are likely to prefer. Its job is to translate human preferences into a numerical reward signal.
And the big advantage is, once trained, this reward model can give feedback automatically. No human needed for every step.
That's the key to scaling it. The reward model acts as a proxy for human judgment, allowing the main LLM training to continue offline without the human in the loop, getting automated preference scores.
Brilliant. Okay, phase three, policy optimization. This is where the main LLM actually gets better using the reward model's feedback.
Right. Now you use RL, the LLM, the policy generates responses. The reward model evaluates those responses and provides a reward signal. Then an RL algorithm, very often PPO, is used to update the LLM's policy.
And PPO is used here again because of that stability, preventing it from going haywire trying to please the reward model.
Exactly. PPO limits how much the policy can be updated, preventing the LLM from generating gibberish in an effort to game the reward system. It keeps the learning focused on genuinely improving according to the learned human preferences.
RLHF seems incredibly powerful for alignment, but it's not perfect, right? What are the catches?
Definitely not perfect. First, cost and scalability. Gathering all of this firsthand human input could be quite expensive. It creates a costly bottleneck. Getting enough high-quality human preference data is hard and slow.
The human bottleneck again? What else?
Subjectivity and no ground truth. Human preferences are messy, highly subjective. What one person thinks is a good answer, another might hate. Establishing consensus is difficult. The reward model learns an average preference, which might not satisfy everyone or capture all nuances.
And people might not always provide honest feedback, adversarial input.
That's a risk. Human guidance is not always provided in good faith. People might try to trick the model or manipulate the feedback process. How does the AI distinguish genuine helpful feedback from malicious input? That's a tough security challenge.
Yeah, how do you defend against that? And finally, overfitting and bias.
Right. If your human feedback comes from a narrow demographic, the model learns their preferences. It might then demonstrate performance issues when used by different groups, potentially amplifying existing biases. Ensuring diverse representative feedback is critical but challenging.
Lots of hurdles. But there's a potential next step mentioned. RLAIF reinforcement, learning from AI feedback. AI evaluating AI.
It's a fascinating idea. Use another large language model to evaluate model responses, replacing some or all of the human feedback. If a highly capable, well-aligned AI could provide the preference judgments, it could potentially overcome the cost and scale issues of RLHF. It's still research-heavy, but a very promising direction.
Wow, that could really change the game. Okay, let's shift to the practical side. How do developers actually build this stuff? Practical implementation and tools. What's in the toolkit?
Python is king here. Libraries like TensorFlow and PyTorch are the foundation for the deep learning parts. Then you have wrappers like Keras, Keras RL, for ready-made RL algorithms. Stable Baselines 3 is very popular. And standard tools like NumPy for math and Matplotlib for plotting are essential.
And where do the agents live and learn the environments?
OpenAI Gym, now often Gymnasium, is the standard. It provides pre-built environments, Cartpole, Atari games like Breakout, Lunar Lander, Grid World, and a standard way to create your own custom environments. This standardization is huge for comparing algorithms.
And developers often work in Jupyter Notebooks for tinkering.
Very common, yeah. Great for interactive development, visualizing learning curves. For storing experiences in Experience Replay, you typically use Python's deck or NumPy arrays. And if you build a custom gym environment, you need to code the reset, step, and render functions.
Once it's trained, how does it get deployed? And what about the hardware needed?
Trained agents, the policies, can be saved down into memory, usually as model checkpoint files. .pc.h5 and reloaded for DOD production. Checkpoints also let you pause and resume long training runs.
And the hardware needs beefy machines.
Oh yeah, DeepRL, especially with image input using CNNs, needs lots of GPU horsepower. Training can take a very long time, even on powerful hardware. It's computationally intensive.
Makes sense. And for things like self-driving cars, you can't just learn on real roads initially. That's where simulation comes in.
Absolutely critical. Hyperphotorealistic simulators provide safe training grounds. You can crash millions of times virtually with no consequence. The goal is often straight from sim to real, transfer train thoroughly in simulation, then deploy the learned policy to the real robot or car. It's essential for safety-critical applications.
Right, so we've really covered a lot of ground. From the basic building blocks, agents, environments, rewards, through the core concepts like explore-exploit, all the way to advanced algorithms like DQNs and policy gradients, and even RLHF for alignment.
It's a powerful framework, definitely. Driving breakthroughs everywhere and constantly evolving with new techniques and ways to make AI more capable and aligned with what we want.
The field's moving fast, isn't it? Research on sample efficiency, continuous actions, even using AI for feedback like RLAIF.
It's incredibly dynamic. Always new challenges and new solutions emerging.
It really is. So as we wrap up, here's something to think about. As these RL agents get better at learning, exploring complex spaces, and even finding those novel strategies humans might not conceive, what are the ultimate limits here? What happens when an intelligence can optimize without our human biases or assumptions? And crucially, how do we ensure these potentially superhuman capabilities are always pointed in a direction that benefits all of us?